Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy. A male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
I am really excited because I'm talking to two of my radio idols. Steve Fitton and Jessica Gale were members of B105's Top 30 Countdown back in 1990, then later went across to do the National Night Show on Triple M. Steve Fitton and Jessica Gale join me right now on the Radio Fanboy Podcast. G'day guys, how are we?
Hi, darling, I'm good. I'm kind
Is this
like...
thing on?
Yeah, it's working.
I'm joking.
I'm kind of like knitting a nervous wee. I've not been in a radio studio for about 100 years. Here I am in Triple M Hobart joining you, and I had to go and get... Who's your gorgeous little friend? Is it Phil Bradley? Bradley Phil?
Phil Bradley, yeah, yeah.
He had to come and just, you know, touch my cans and because you guys were like being right at the front of my cans, and now... They're resting gently. Hi.
Yes, and in case you're listening, she's referring to headphones, not the cans on the front. And Steve, you're in WS in Sydney at the moment, mate.
Correct, yeah. I'm on air in 40 minutes' time, so we've got a little window. There's an hour break between Mike Hammond and myself where we have Jason Stavely do the 80s, totally 80s show. I call it Switzerland. So there's an hour with studio time, and I've got it today, and here we are. So it's a three-way hookup. We're in Hobart. What, Sunshine Coast in Sydney?
That's right. Very exciting times. Guys, how did you start on the Top 30 Countdown?
You go, Jess, because you were there before me.
So David Reimer, he was looking at me with his ear, and I, of course, don't know who he is, and I'm doing a radio school, John Knox. Do you remember Knox is just 60 seconds away with all the news?
Yeah.
And so at that time, I'm selling advertising for a guy called Alan McGirvin. And Alan McGirvin was... the first recce jock for Double J before it was Triple J, right? And he said to me, you'd be amazing on the air. Like, you know, you should go and do this course. And, of course, I never turned up. And if I did, I was wearing a caftan. I had no shoes. I was stoned. I had a German shepherd wearing a, you know, scarf or something. And so I'm telling a really great story, I think, outside the bathroom at what was it called then before B105 Sissy?
4BK.
4BK. I don't have a short-term memory problem. And so then Reimer's just staring at me with his ear. And I'm thinking, who's this guy with this, you know, amazing white teeth and glistening blue eyes? And, you know, he's very good looking. He's very engaged with me, but in a weird way through his ear. And so he starts asking me some really kind of, who are you? And I'm like, well, who the fuck are you? You know, like, you know, a bit like that, really. And so then... He then calls me a week later and goes, hi, do you remember me? And I'm like, yeah, you're that kind of weird stalker guy. And so he's like, listen, I want you to be my sidekick. You know, I'm starting a new radio show. And I'm like, oh. And then he decided to tell me that John Knox said, no, not Jessica Gale. She's really naughty. She never shows up. I've got someone so much better. He's like, nah, she's who I want, because it was the laugh. Because I could laugh on cue, right? So you're like 3, 2, 1 like that. And so yeah, and that's how I got the gig. And then Sissy, he was the mid-dawner, and then we just sort of, you know, connected, and Reimer got taken out, and at the time I'm getting paid $20 an hour. Reimer's on 100G.
Whoa.
And really, then Sissy and I really met, and that was kind of like Sissy was still on big bucks compared to me, but we got even when we went to Sydney. But the thing is that when Sissy and I started working together, that was just, you know, what I called him, we really gelled, because really it was David Reimer's show and I was a sidekick. But when we met, it was more like it was our show. Would you say that's true?
Well, yeah, I was thrown in there. But yeah, by the way, Sissy is the nickname I get, and I call Jess Gina Gnome. So Jess, and we're like Tommy and Gina in the Bon Jovi songs. But yeah, so Reimer got transferred down to 2 Day when Brad March moved down there. So Mark Lee was our program director at the time, and I was doing late nights. And he said, "Look, I'm going to give you this opportunity because whenever David's away, you fill in. You and Jess seem to, you know, click." So I got promoted into. No, I've still got the memo actually that Mark wrote. It was a lovely memo. know. But it was, yeah, it was kind of Jess's show. I was the anchor, but she was she'd already, you know, cemented herself in with the audience and stuff. And back then, this is pre-internet, pre-computer, pre-everything. Kids got all of their info and all their entertainment from the radio at night. It was always a little bit naughty. We had all, you know, the latest songs and all the latest artists. And Jess was we were the king and queen of the kids. At one point, we had a 41.4 share, I think.
Holy shit.
Of a 7 to 10 breakdown. Yeah, so...
it was the highest rating shift in the country, right?
Jesus Christ.
But on what Sissy's saying is that we used to get this fax. What was it called? It was like entertainment reported news, right? And that every magazine house had it too, you know, so New Weekly or whatever, right? And so in all reality, when I used to do like Hollywood gossip, people were hearing it from me first, unlike today. So it was a really interesting position. It's sort of like the olden days and you kind of go, wow, like we were kind of like... It's just totally different because everyone today is a celebrity, right? And that's how it was then.
Very fast-paced as well. You know, it was very hands-on. There were reel-to-reels. There were 6-cart machines. There were 2 CD players and everything was drop-edited or edited, during the show. It was not like today where the computer runs everything and your play-out system, the radio guys listening will know what I mean. You only really engage when you have to do either a voice track or go live or do a contest piece, whereas we had to crossfade everything. So, you know, that 3 hours felt like 5 minutes. I'd come out like a racehorse, you know, go to bed wet every night.
Poor Sissy. I mean, I'd pop down to the Honda for a sneaky cone.
Oh, yeah. You'd be sitting there touching up your lippy or getting a neck massage from our producer. And, you know, there's me over there running the 1500 every night. But it was great fun. It was good fun. And
Drag Queen Monday. Do you remember Drag Queen Monday?
So, and then didn't we have we had a high school take over the show on every Friday night. We had a high school kid come in, and see those kids would come in, and they'd be a hero. Their entire school would listen that night.
Were you allowed to drink and smoke in the studio as well?
All the
smoke,
time.
Smoke, yeah. We lost Jess. Oh, there you are. Yep.
Yep.
I thought you might have ducked down to the Honda for a joint. Yeah, you could. I used to smoke in the studio, which is terrible. I know I shouldn't. And looking back now, I don't know how any non-smoking announcer could deal with that, having to come in after a smoker. But during our time at Triple M, it became all non-smoking. So we used to just open the windows on the 25th floor.
Oh,
and
yes.
And then there was the night slash drank an entire bucket of bourbon while we were on the air, and there was some language that night. But that's a story Jess can tell. She made an impression on Guns N' Roses guitarist that night.
That was actually this is how it happened. So the year before, when Sissy and I were separated for a short time, right, we both left B105. Run away to Triple M. And so I then went across the road to Triple M for a while to work with Gavin Miller. And on my last night on the air ever in Brisbane, I thought, well, there's a piercing show in town. What's a girl to do? I'm going to get the hood of my clitoris pierced live on the air, right?
Yeah.
So...
Believe me, this is an urban legend. This actually happened.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was even sort of like years and years later when I was doing breakfast radio in Perth, I had Eddie Maguire and Sam Newman going, oh, my God, you're Jess. Hey. Oh, my God. And they just wanted to shake my hand. They just sort of – and nothing sort of perverted about it. They just sort of thought it was such, you know, Howard Stern-worthy kind of like, wow, that's, you know, quite amazing broadcasting. And I suppose it was. But anyhow, what Sissy's done is that we've got Slash in the studio, he's decided to tell him about my piercing. And so then Slash then goes into theatre of the mind and pretending that he's seeing it. Like, so he's pretending to the whole of Sydney radio that I am showing him my pink bits. And I'm just like, are you serious? And so then I'm completely going, and instead of kind of going with it, I'm going against it because I really became really kind of overwhelmed, suppose.
Hey, Slash, check this out.
Nice beaver. Thanks, I just had it stuffed. That was one of our favourite lines, that one, I think.
I suppose in many ways, you know, like back in the day, it was mainly Triple J that were doing in-studio interviews with celebs and, you know, music artists and that kind of thing. And we really pushed for that in Brisbane. And I know with Sissy, I used to be saying to him, go live, go live, go live, because back in those days you were supposed to record everything, including all the calls and then all the people. But so then we decided to go live, and then we were just getting everyone that was a music artist coming in and doing really great things with them. Not asking them the boring questions like, oh, you know, so who did backup there? But, you know, just more kind of like, you know, paint us your perfect Sunday, or, you know, talking to people about just really everyday things that we could actually bring the humanity out in people. Don't you think that was kind of what it was about for us, to make things very real?
Mm, and it, when times they couldn't come to us, we set you up with the mobile phone studio walking thing that used to hang around your shoulder, and you'd go to an event. You'd go to the Ecker, or, you know, whatever big was in town, or the Prince concert. I remember that night because I think by the time I got up there after the show had ended, I caught the last half of the encore.
That's but you'd true. Been, you know what? I've still got a torn ligament from carrying that.
Yeah, that was
phone around in the night.
That was massive technology, but it worked. I mean, it was some sort of big battery thing and a phone and a microphone. So you were effectively interviewing people. It was a good trickery. It was great work by our techs to organise it. And you'd go out and spend the night wherever, you know, with your thing, and you wouldn't be in the studio all night. But it sounded like you were with me because you were.
That's right. It was kind of like quite cutting edge. And that Prince concert, I recall that I actually broke the fact that he was doing that impromptu jam after his show at Transformers. So, yeah, and I remember like knocking on random people's doors and asking them what was in their freezer. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Just crazy. And you know, the worst part is I kept a lot of that stuff, but I'd spent 12 months in Cairns in the late 90s, and the humidity up there ruined all of my tapes.
Oh, no.
All of my videos. I had videotapes of every single TV appearance we made because, you know, we did the, you know, Wednesday morning with Rob Bruff. Jess, we'd go on TV up at Channel 7, and you know, we did a live show. I think one New Year's Eve, you and I, they dangerously gave us mics and camo crew and let us go live around South Bank, which was very dangerous.
Oh, that's right. I was drinking a lot of champagne, remember? And they kind of said to me, "Listen, you can't go on with the with the glass." And I went, "Really? Why?"
Yeah. So there were a lot of opportunities there, but you know, these days everyone's got a video camera in their pocket. And I've lost a lot of our stuff, which is a shame because it was. And then onwards at Triple M, at the PD at the time was an Apple freak, and we did the first little internet simulcast, I think you'd call it. I don't think anybody else in Sydney had the technology to be able to watch it, Our content director was sitting in his office watching it, and it was a tiny little black and white screen. So we did that, and then Michael Tunn was doing a national night show on Triple J, but we then became the first commercial show to go Five Cap City National, being Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth, Melbourne. So it was short-lived because of things, but yeah, it was heady times. It was fun times.
How long were you doing the Triple M night show? Because I only vaguely remember calling in one night and I said, oh, I remember you. You were from B105. You went, shh, don't mention that station.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was 94, late 94 through to early 96. I remember the weekend I got fired, or the Monday I got fired, was the John Howe. It was the Jess and I had been in the Mardi Gras that Saturday night. We were on a float for Tu Wong Fu, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So we were on a flatbed truck in a big Cadillac. In the Mardi Gras, and it was also the night of the election. John Howard got elected, and then I got boned the following Monday. But yeah, so it was probably 18 to 20 months we were there. It was Steve and Jess by request, and then went on to become The Wall, which was not a success. That was some kind of spinning out of control. They tried to make Triple M a commercial version of Triple J, Jess. Remember that? And it just didn't work.
No, it didn't work. But I was also complete. I went a bit nutty then, let's be honest. So, yeah.
It was when we were at Triple M that I threw a cart at you one night because we were going live. Our opener was going live around the country, and I looked up and you weren't there. And I said, where's Jess? And someone said, oh, she's out at the lift paying for a dinner.
What's a girl to do? I was hung.
Yeah, even before Uber Eats, you were out there paying for your dinner.
My tofu noodles and stuff like that. For me, what I find hilarious right then is that what you were reminding me about being on a float and all of that, I'm like trying to search my memory. just like, okay.
Can you not remember that?
You know what I recall mainly was fighting a lot with management in the way of doing the firsts of a lot of things, you know, and always being seen as like, God, you know, we want to do this, we want to do that. No, no, no. And I think it was a really big push at that time, Lee, to be really creative.
Yeah.
And I think I would say that we were pioneers and trailblazers, definitely in the commercial setting. I, of course, was a very big fan of Triple J Breakfast. I used to love Helen Razor and Michael.
Helen Razor,
yes,
yeah.
And so, yeah, exactly. So Helen Razor was very much, you know, someone that I really looked up to. I didn't really have anyone like that on commercial radio, because really all the women really towed the line more, and they were just, you know, laughing on cue, and they were just bubbly, you know, and or giggly and all that kind of thing, which you see, I'm still seeing it today. It's the same rhetoric, you know, that is just everywhere. And I think if anything, I wanted to take people on a journey of like who I was and what I thought and what I saw. And back in those days, it was like, no, stop sharing about your personal life. And as we can see now, it's the complete reverse. You're actually expected to do that. So, and then I can remember being in, you know, like PDs, and that's what they were called in those days. You know, Jess, you're going to have to stop saying "darl." And I go, oh, darl, I'm so, oh, darl, I'm so, you know, I just couldn't help it, you know. I wasn't even being facetious. It was just, I suppose I was not a radio person at all. You know, I came from a wild hairdressing background. I mean, it was like, you know, gays and drag queens that brought me up on the streets of Sydney when I was 16. I was completely uneducated. I would consider myself to be the first Sarah Marie in many ways, you know, back in those days. Like, people used to think, what the fuck is she going to say next? Because, of course, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then people would think, wow, how did you come up with that? And I'd be like, what do you mean? And people thought I would prep, but I did nothing.
Yeah.
And I think in many ways, if I had my time again and I understood the corporate way and I understood what was going on, because I had no idea. I was just kind of whipped along, you know. And someone like Steve really supported that part of me, because I wasn't really fit for management, because I was pretty much wild, wasn't I?
Yeah, well, I just had to donut the brakes, really. I just had to do all the, you know, the radio stuff and let you run wild and then bring you back in and play a song or an ad break or whatever. And that's how it worked. It flew by. And the whole experience flew by. There are things that I can't remember that sometimes pop into my head and I think, wow, we played pool with you too at Mary Street Nightclub one night after the show.
Yes.
You know, we stayed up all night one night. We did a sleep out with all of these kids at Town Hall in Brisbane. You know, we were invited to everything. We were included in everything. It's a little different these days when most radio stations now, it's the breakfast team is the focus.
Yeah.
Even here with our website, our Facebook page is WSFM with Jonesy and Amanda, which is fine by me because, you know, I'm not a spotlight kind of guy. But back in those days, because we were so big with the kids, the breakfast show were massive with the adults, and then the kids all wanted our autographs.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense for sure.
It was just crazy times. It was good fun, and it was a great time to be alive. We were there through the changeover from 4BK AM into B105 FM. It was just like Jess said, it was a pioneering time. And David Reimer, you know, he laid the groundwork. He was a very talented announcer. I took a lot away from him as far as learning and studying what he did, because I was late nights. I remember the time you guys, remember I got busted for drink driving and I used to have to ride my pushy into work and you'd laugh at me. You'd laugh at me every night when I turned up in my spandex.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. And you used to have like big hair.
Yeah. Big hair and big glasses.
You know,
yeah, those photos will never see the light of day.
I was the
anyway,
last
it's the B105 Top 30. Stephen just here.
Hey, that's the memories right there.
This is the last person in the world.
This is Culture Beat.
Phone.
Mr. Vane.
Yeah. The other good thing was back then too, and you know, I was just sitting at my desk a moment ago when we've got a third radio station here called The Edge, which broadcasts out to Western Sydney, and it's an R&B hip-hop station. And I was listening to it while I was doing my work, and I actually said to someone, there's no new music anymore, because I think three out of four songs have got a sample from something from the 90s.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so we were right in the middle of a fantastic time for music, the dance music of the 90s, you know, all starting with Guru Josh in 1990, Time for the Guru. It was just just, and the Mr. Veins and the Culture Beats and all of that stuff. It was just, so the show was hot. It was hot. It really travelled quickly. And yeah, the kids loved it.
You got a story about Guru Josh, don't you, Steve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's, the, no, we that's, I'll just tell you without names. One night when I was the late night announcer, there was a studio at B105 in the old Bowen Hills. There was a back door and there was a button and I had a video camera you could see. And I got a buzz at about midnight and I looked down and it was a couple of colleagues and some random. I buzzed them in. What do you want? Oh, the DJ at the club we're at doesn't have Guru Josh. We're just going to take the studio copy. Yeah. They took the studio copy of 1990 and took it back to the club. So yeah. Those were the days.
Wow. Having the access to the brand new music on B105. I was going to ask you about your Porsche, because you must have been doing all right if you bought yourself a little Porsche.
Look, to be honest, it cost me $24,000. Oh, it was a Porsche, but it was a poor man's Porsche. Yep. But I wanted one. I always wanted to be a millionaire by 40. That never happened. But I always wanted to have a Porsche by 25, and I bought one for my birthday. It was a 944. And it didn't last long because it had no air conditioning in Brisbane. So I think I had it for about 8 months. Ouch. But you know, at least I kicked that goal. But yeah, it wasn't a $100,000 car, and no. I wasn't on Kyle Sanderland's money. No. Let's just put that right there.
You know Kyle quite well, don't you, Jess, from years gone by?
Well, I don't anymore, but back in the day, I recall meeting him at, what was the station? Oh, yes, here I am in Triple M going, yeah, Triple M in Perth. And so he was the promotions manager, and he told me that, you know, he used to love Sissy and I on the air when he was, you know, a kid. And so, I don't know, he used to massage my shoulders because he's got healing hands.
Really? Kyle.
Amazing. And that's why I'm sure that's why he's got so many hot women always. And so, anyway, he used to, like, come into the studio when I was doing breakfast radio with Dave Gore, and we used to have Russell Gilbert come down the line. And he used to do this amazing neck work on me. And then I used to think how – and that was when he used to own a Mr. Whippy shop in Brisbane as well.
Yeah, right.
And, he was amazing. It was actually me that used to say to him, God, you should work on the air. Like, you should absolutely work on the air. Yep. And I really pushed for that for him. And I've always had an absolute hankering for him and I to do a show together. And we did talk about that a really long time ago. And yeah, it just never got off the ground. But I mean, I think the thing is with Kyle, you know, he's just who he is now. And, you know, I'm just sort of someone in his past. And so when you ask me how well do I know him, well, I knew him in Perth 20 years ago, you know. Yeah, okay. And that's just, and that also reminds me of when someone would ask us, you know, oh, what's the Red Hot Chili Peppers like, or what's, you know, this band like? And at the end of the day, you're meeting somebody and they don't want to be met because they're forced by a record company to come and have an interview,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so you're just meeting someone in that moment, and what you want to do is make it as painless as possible, and I suppose, and be remembered as somebody that didn't behave like a fan, you know. We never asked for an autograph or a photo or anything like that, and didn't ask the typical questions, you know, like just tried to get in there a bit more, I don't know, just like how we're speaking, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to make it all a bit more natural and not to try to go for the goss, because really you got the goss that way. You know, because then they would naturally open up to you because you weren't going at them, you know.
Yeah, nice and relaxed, then you're on their level kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
when they're on the promo trail and they're doing five or six, seven interviews in a row, you want to be the one that they relax in and be the one that they remember. And many, many was the time when they'd go, oh, is that it? Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
You know, the show's over kind of thing. And, you know, the record company managers standing outside, they're happy because, you know, the CD got plugged or we gave a bunch of them away or something. But it wasn't just music people we got through. We pretty much got anyone that was anybody that came through Brisbane came through our show. And many, many, many times it was live. It was straight off the plane, you know, let's go straight into B105. You've got to do Steve and Jess. So like Jess said, it was all about making them comfortable. You'd have their manager in their ear saying, don't mention this, don't talk about the girlfriend, you know, don't talk about the sex tape, and then everything was fine. And then Jess would come in and say, so tell us about your sex tape.
No, I was going to say my favourite time was massaging Julian Lennon's head. I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, because he had a really bad headache, right, because he's literally just come from the plane. He was – how kind was he? So
that was a big day, that, yeah.
Races.
That
was –
That was a lovely day. I've got a gentle photo of that somewhere of you and I introducing him on stage in the Queen Street Mall, massive crowd.
That's right. So, but before we went down there, he's got a headache and I'm like, you know, being the hippie I was and I still am, I've got lavender on me at all times, 24/7. So I'm like, Dylan, I've got some essential oil lavender. Would you like me to rub it on you? So, oh, that'd be great. So I can just remember thinking, I have got John Lennon's son in between my hands and life is good, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Like that's
there's many stories like that, but
forever, right?
But then there's other stuff that I can't remember, and you can't either, because you know, the 90s were they were interesting times. You know, things happened.
Yes.
You know, I think
we won't go into too much parties detail.
But my long term memory is well and truly shot. So there's some things I can look at a photo and go, oh. And another thing, Jess, too. Remember, I think we were at Triple. We did a lot of OBs. We remember that time we travelled to Noumea. And we broadcast over there into Sydney. That was really interesting. And then I got lost in the little car trying to find the airport because it was all left-hand drive and no one spoke it English.
And you were smoking on the plane. You were smoking on the plane.
You could smoke on the plane. Yeah, let's sit up the back in the smoking section and everyone down the front's going to smell it anyway. I mean, whose stupid idea was that? And then I hired a car and I kept going for the window winder to change the gears because it was all on the wrong side. And then, yeah, but that was kind of groundbreaking. We had a little suitcase satellite thing that the guys all unfolded and there we were in Noumea, New Caledonia, broadcasting into Sydney. We did a lot of snow OBs and stuff like that. It was just good times. It was good fun. Radio's changed a heck of a lot. It was a big shock for me to come back to it after 7 years break in 2018 and just to how everything is so breakfast heavy now.
Yeah.
You don't have the night show. Well, you do, but they're a national show and you know, many's the time they're not even in the city that you live. So, and kids now get everything from everywhere else.
Yeah, that's so true. And Jess, what are you up to these days?
What, is this like a free plug?
Sure, go for it.
So my handle is Jessica G Official.
Yeah.
And I suppose I'm a solopreneur and I work with biohacking technologies that actually bring forth the best version of yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. I work with events and I do hands-on healing as well. Wherever I am, I'm kind of like a traveling healer.
Yeah.
I've got some really amazing products. Something from Austria known as the Lasea Light, and it's like a dynamic meditative experience that you lie under with your eyes closed and it opens up your pineal gland and you see like sacred geometry. So instead of having to like go to a shaman and have ayahuasca and vomit and shit the night away, you can come in at lunchtime, love, and just totally get activated and go next level.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've kind of, I'm working in that way, you know, so I do like conscious counselling. And so, look, the joke is, of course, I used to be really, really wild and I've had a big journey with addiction, mental illness, all sorts of things, you know. And so now, as a woman that's 50 fucking seven next year.
Hey, well done.
I'm kind of like working more in the ways of the wise woman and the crone, if you will, and working with people in really deep ways, but mainly underground. So I'm not doing look at me influencer on Instagram and stuff like that. If anything, I really have got that really great feeling that I've actually been in the public. I've somewhat had this kind of small-time fame and I never even tell anybody I was a radio presenter, hardly ever, right? Yeah. And so that's what makes it so funny to go back in time to be with you and to be thinking about this time of my life, which, of course, shaped everything I am now with what I bring through, you know, for others. So, yeah, I hold serious space for growth, yeah.
What a duo, Steve and Jess on the B105 Top 30 Countdown back from the 90s and also went across to Triple M. What was the show called on Triple M again? I forgot.
Steve and Jess by request, because today FM already had the Top 30 Hot 30 name. Then it became The Wall, which was awful. Oh.
Steve and Jess, thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy Podcast, guys.
Jess, do a burp.
No. I'm a crone. I don't know.
No, we're both
I'm
too old.
Farted.
Oh,
The Radio Fanboy Podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.